Manx Radio. It's the home of the Happy Hearts right here in the wonderful Isle of Man.
Quality speaks the loudest and the longest and the strongest, but it doesn't necessarily shout, 'cause those in the know always know what it's all about.
During the 1960s and 70s, many, many people came to the Isle of Man either for a holiday or to work in the then booming tourism industry. We're going to hear from some of those folk, often referred to as comeovers by the local population. So let's go back in time, courtesy of Jennifer from the northeast of England, Pam from St. Helens, Jerry, a musician from Yorkshire, along with his wife Chris, Steve from Birkenhead on the Wirral, but starting with Angela from Liverpool, who first arrived here in 1962. Her story begins in her hometown as Merseybeat began to take hold.
We used to go out with the school to Parkfield tennis, and every time we used to go past what was called the Aintree Institute, and it was written up there, the Beatles every Friday, half a crown, or two and six, whatever, in that money. And my friend and I, like, we were only 15, and we'd say, we have to go there, you know. And we ended up, we used to go every Friday. We must have seen the Beatles more than many times. We'd had hot dinners before they were famous. And we loved Pete Best, which better than Ringo, really, you know. So we started off there. And then we used to go clubbing all the time as we got into 16. And we used to go, people today keep thinking of the 60s, the Grafton. But to us, when we were that age, it was the Locarno. That was the the old fashioned was the, you know, the Grafton. But the Locarno, we used to call it the Lock. And in the side there was a place called the Tudor Club. You could go in there for a drink, but the other you didn't. We had wonderful times in there. But then we used to go to the Cavern. Got my Cavern card still from 1962. Watched the Beatles in there and other groups, Jerry and the Pacemakers, the Searchers, all the usual ones. There were so many places you could go and see. Like, I used to go over to New Brighton and we saw Jerry Lee Lewis. Brilliant, brilliant night that was. And then I actually saw Roy Orbison on the Empire, Chuck Berry, all the greats. I've been looking, even Cliff, you know. It was just a magical time to be in Liverpool. And yet, I wanted to come over to the Isle of Man. And so many people must have heard it was absolutely buzzing here. It was so much to do, crowds of people, all passed each other on the pavements and the promenade. I came on holiday in 1962 with my parents. I liked it that much. I came back with my friends in the following year, 1963. And then I decided I like this island. I'm going to try and work there for the season. And I couldn't get my friends to come, but they wouldn't leave their jobs. But my sister, who just had never been to the Isle of Man, said she would come with me. And it was the best summer.
I was working in a factory up in the north, not a bit north of Newcastle. They close for holidays. And, you know, they always closed for weeks or 2 weeks at a time. This was a week's holiday. And some of the girls in there, one of them, my friend, was coming over to the Isle of Man. I'd never really heard of it till then. And said, do you fancy coming? I thought, why not?
The first time I came on holiday with my parents, I had my friend with me. We were a bit naughty, really, because we used to go to different pubs, meet boys and tell them we were 17.
I caught a train from a central station in Newcastle to Liverpool, and side loaders at the time, onto the side loaders. To me, it was just an enormous ship, because coming from where I came from, it was so different from anything I knew. And it was exciting as well. And we're all a bunch of young girls together, really, when you think of it, you know, in our teens. I'd never really been away on holiday before. So this was a big thing for me to actually experience that, you know. They had books, and I managed to get a bed as well with them in a little guest house, a little boarding house then, up Derby Road.
We were in a boarding house on Bucks Road, the Lansdowne it was. So the days when you had to be in for 12 o'clock, otherwise we were locked out. And because of us too, we had to be locked out, didn't we? And my poor dad had to sneak down at 2 o'clock in the morning to let us in. So that was those days. I mean, we accepted it then, but it was, when you think, it was really bad. You know, everyone shared the toilets and the bathrooms on the landings and everything. And we just thought that was normal and that was it. But of course, today you wouldn't dream of it, would you?
But I hadn't really prepared myself because I didn't have any. Well, I had a bit of money when I got there, but not really a lot of money. when I was over on holiday, it was awesome. It was absolutely brilliant. But I ran out of money.
We all went around just like ordinary teenagers. We went all around. We never actually left Douglas. We thought that was the only place to be. And we used to go and the entertainment and everything was really good.
No work, all play.
It's a heart-filled holiday. It's a heart-filled holiday.
No work, all play.
The station that's our heart.
We got chosen to do the Clubland Command performance, the Winter Gardens in Blackpool. 6,000 audience, all impresarios and agents and concert secretaries of clubs and things like that. And from that, Bob, I can't remember his second name now, but he used to do a lot of the bookings here. And he did it through Billy Forrest, who was an agent just outside Birmingham. He booked us to play in the Lido on the summer season in 1969 because he knew we were all readers and I could back the show as well as do our own act.
The summer season of that year was very, very buoyant. Lots and lots of holidaymakers. All the hotels all had live entertainment. There was street photographers going in all the bars, taking photographs. Manx Radio also used to come along with roving microphones to quite a few of the venues along the promenade. It was just absolutely buzzing.
We did things like going into the Villa Marina Gardens. We used to come up here Douglas Head with our transistor radios. And you could go along the beach those days, which was packed. And you'd have a certain show on Pick of the Pops on the Sunday. And everyone had a transistor and everyone had the same programme on. So you could walk along the whole prom and follow the programme. You know, that was the way it was then. It was lovely.
Oh, it was like...
Yeah,
it's easy. Well, the girls were meeting and everybody... Look, arm in arm going up. It was like a Mardi Gras.
Yeah, very really safe as well. Very safe.
It was really, really...
But Port Sodric was very busy as well at that time. You know, you could have a day trip out to Port Sodric and there was a bar there and entertainment on there.
Wake up and live. You're in the Heartline Generation.
For music,
Manx Radio.
For information,
Manx Radio.
The station that's our heart.
We came back to work on the island, to the Beresford. She was a funny lady that she said, when we get there, we'll have a lovely dinner ready for you and all that. You know, we were starving as teenagers, carried our cases right along the prom, got there and she had a nice plate of bread and jam for us. That was it. We only lasted there about 3 weeks as chambermaids because she actually got us there. It was WIT then. And then I think she didn't want to pay us before the season started. Anyway, we had a bit of a row with her and we got out and we didn't have anywhere to go. But in that time, we'd already met, my sister and I had already met these two guys. They were really good to us and said, oh, the fella I was with was saying, you know, here's some money, I'll put you up, and you know, we'll put you up in a little boarding house or something. Don't go home. Anyway, I didn't take it, but we slept in a car that night, one of the cars, and then we went along the prom the next day and we got to asking for jobs. Got to the Marlborough, there was a guy doing his garden out there and said, yeah, have you got a job for us? And he said, I haven't. He said, well, I think next door are looking for people. And that was the Carriersbrook. And that was it. Brilliant. We went in there. My sister went waiting on and I was in the kitchen. And it was a wonderful, wonderful season.
I had been with the school and we came a couple of times with my mum and dad. We came when it was Seaman's strike in 66. And then we stayed at the boarding house that we subsequently bought. We stayed there for a couple of years. So that must have been where they got the idea.
This is Manx Radio in Douglas.
I ran out of cash very quickly, very easily. And I just said where we were staying, did they know any work going anywhere? And they says, oh, we could do with a new chambermaid. So I says, oh, can I do? So they took me on there and then as a chambermaid. You know, so I stayed then for the season. They put me up. I stayed there with them, and they were great. They were lovely. And I phoned up my job and says, I quit. And that was it. I stayed.
For some reason, I wasn't working. And a hotel and caterer came out. I used to get that sort of every week. And there was a job advertised for the Isle of Man. And a lad from Birkenhead, never been in the Isle of Man before. And I thought, so I applied. And the vacancy was for a head waiter at the Villiers Hotel. So I came over, got interviewed. I was successful in getting a job. What a great decision.
Well, I was the one that had to get up first about 6 o'clock in the Carriersbrook. I had to get up and put the hot plate on, ready for the breakfast. 70-odd eggs in a pan, just a big frying pan. And anyway, we managed, and my sister and her and the friend Kay were up in the dining room, and they often had to come down and do the toast for me, because while the eggs were frying, the toast was burning, and it was quite chaotic at the time. But it was still fun.
Did the normal things of waiting on the tables and making the beds and stripping the beds and all the work that was needed. I'd be up so I can start at around about 7 in the morning. Not so much in the rooms, because they'll have people in them, they'll have occupants in here, but it was about getting the breakfast table set, getting all the tablecloths just right, the cutlery, the crockery, the salt and peppers. Sauces weren't the thing then. Proper dishes of jam in and marmalade in. Then you had to take the orders with a piece of paper. As people came down, you'd see what, you know, what they wanted to have for breakfast, and you know, the bacon and eggs, or just cereal, what have you. And that was part of that role.
We used to get the boats coming in from Ardrossan, and they'd be coming in at 6 o'clock. So you were always up to greet the guests. Everything was ready, and their mum would start breakfast from about 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock onwards. But it was always set meals. Like now, you can come between certain times. In that time, it was a set breakfast at 9 o'clock. All the guests came down at 9 o'clock. It was a mass start, if you like. They didn't really have that much of a choice. It was, I mean, it sounds very archaic now, but that's how it was. Porridge, fruit juice or cornflakes. Then they'd have a fried breakfast. And then they'd toddle off out from about 10 o'clock so that the rooms could be serviced.
The proprietor, Betty, she was a lovely, lovely person, but she did like the drink a bit. So she often had to lie in while I was left to do the breakfast. And she'd get up about 11 o'clock, come down and have a drink, send up for a drink for me, which was like a shandy. And then the guy that used to come in with the vegetables, we'd all have a drink that time in the morning while the two girls upstairs had to give them down, and never asked them if they wanted one. But
the people who had the place, they did the cooking, and it was just a matter of shouting. But breakfast would be from about 8 in the morning till about 9, 8 till 9, maybe half 9, I don't know. And there would be a gong that you'd go and hit this damn gong, vibrating, you know. And you'd find people would then come traipsing down, you know. And it's only after they had come down, they'd had breakfast, they had gone out for the day, and we cleaned up the breakfast, of course, the dishes, clean up the tables, remaking the tables ready for the next meal. Because them could full board would be a lunch as well, and then an evening meal. So you'd be resetting the tables every few hours, really. They'd be out for the day. Now, once they'd actually gone out, you could get up to the rooms and make the beds. Or if anybody had checked out, you'd be able to strip the beds and start cleaning.
When we bought it, it was a boarding house. It's probably called a B&B now, but it was a boarding house, because all of them were little boarding houses then. And we used to get girls come over from Scotland, Ireland, to help out. But as I say, I kind of, because I was of the age, I was thrown in and did it all. But we used to have the gongs to get people down. Okay, you used to have a gong. All the ones on the drive had gongs to get people down for their meals.
Now, they didn't have en suites, you know. They all had their own. There was a loo per floor. So that needed to be cleaned as well, well and truly. Yeah, it was fun. It was fun just doing that. It was hard work. And come to bed changing day, which would always be on the Saturday, because the people came for a week, and it was Saturday to Saturday, you know. And Saturday was a heavy day, because you'd get the big sheet and you get everything in the middle, and then you tie it up with a knot and you drag it down the stairs to the front door, and because it's laundry, the laundry vans would come to pick up these big sheets, bags of sheets, really, which they'd take them off. As long as you put your label on, you know they're going to be coming back to you. You know, once you can get that out of the way, then you could start remaking the beds, ready for the 2 o'clock arrivals.
I'll tell you a funny story with that lady. I think it was, anyway. It was so, she always like having this lie in, and we had a record player at the time, and records, LPs and that, as we called records. And we took this record player up into her bedroom. She was flat out. We put the record on to wake her up, and it was Roy Orbison singing Beautiful Dreamer, Wake Unto Me. I just had a giggle about that, you know, and she took the funny as well.
The island was like something completely different. It was unique, I would suggest. The nightlife, the people, everything was different. It was more relaxed.
In those days, you always had the fellas coming in and threatening to pick you up and take you and throw you in the sea and everything like that, you know. I don't know, I just think everything was so much fun.
There were no places for us to go because we were playing every night, you know, so it's...
He was playing, I was gallivanting. We'd start at the Peveril, then we'd go on to... There was the Villiers, and we'd go in the Empress, and then from the Empress, we'd perhaps go on to the Crescent. From the Crescent, probably on to the Continental.
We were going out, I mean, the summer, you could start at the Peveril and basically go right the way along to Summerland, and every place had entertainment. And the amount of people, you know, you see the photographs now with the beach as it was and Frankie with all his boats and everything else. It was just astronomical. You were never bored. There was something going on all the time.
I used to work every day, and I had half a day off on a Tuesday, and the other girls would do like shifts, like one would do the morning, one would do the afternoon sometimes, and I got £8 a week, and my sister and friend Kay got £4.10 a week, and we had to send something home to our mother out of that money. But you did it, you managed it.
And in that time, while the girls were doing the housekeeping, Mum then would be preparing potatoes or whatever else. I think we used to have a main meal at lunchtime. So it would be potatoes and meat and something, or it might be chips and fish or whatever. But that was always prepared in the morning. Then they had that at lunchtime. And then in the afternoon, she might have got an hour's break, and then you'd start doing the tea. The tea was usually a cold tea. It could be a salad. It was nothing really. It might be sandwiches and cakes and things, but it was always, you always had a pudding after your thing. So it was pretty full on. And then they did supper at 10 o'clock. So there was not really a lot of break, I don't think. And that was general for all the guest house people. That's how it was.
My kind of sound.
My kind of sound.
The summer season started usually about Easter, and then from Easter full on then till the end of September, and I got thrown in then to do all the bits and bobs in the boarding house, the waiting on, the chambermaid in, all the rest of the bits and pieces.
It was 7 days a week. You'd have a couple of hours off if you were lucky, you know, but somebody will have gone off sick or somebody wasn't able to do this, so you'd step in and you'd do it, you know. The bars, what bars were around there then at the time? I can remember, so like I even got a job. Come towards the end of the season again, I've then find another job. Down in Duke Street, there used to be a place called the Maypole. That was a supermarket, right? But upstairs, it had the cafe, and I got a job in there washing the dishes. And I thought, wow, this is great, you know. I'm moving, I'm going places.
In the summer season, there was loads to do, even though you were just a teenager. You know, there was all the stuff at the Crescent. There was the crazy golf in between school and working in the hotel and stuff. But there was loads of shops. Everywhere was open till late at night.
The Castle Mona was going then, and it was the casino. I was 17, but it had to be 21, but I got in. It was fascinating to me as a young girl to see playing roulette and everything. And then they used to have wonderful cabarets on. It was really sophisticated and good. It never stayed the same once it went to the Palace. It was still good fun. And I remember going there to the King's Club, and that was really good.
I can remember even going to the casino and walking out the casino. God, you know. So like at 5 a.m. because that would be closed then. You know, you'd come out the casino, you'd walk along the beach, you'd go home, have a shower and go to work. You know, and we did that, you know. You did that all the time, you know. It was just part of life. Not every night, you know, but on a weekend. You know, it would be so like a weekend thing and you wouldn't sleep for 24 hours. You know, it wasn't heavy drinking to say, but you would be dancing, you'd be chatting. But yeah, I can remember having sore feet and carrying my shoes along the beach many a time. Got back in time to have a shower, have a bite to eat and back to and down to work. Yeah, you couldn't see them doing it now.
The Lido came along. I think it was the Palace when I was first there, but I know when I was there anyway, that was the time when they had all the acts that used to come over from across.
Very, very big crowds. Yeah. I mean, it seated 2,000 when it first changed from a ballroom to a nightclub. It were absolutely heaving every night.
The Stones, they came over on the Lido. PJ Proby, you know, he always did his party piece. There was a lot to do, and it was a different type of entertainment than what there is now, in a sense, I think.
Well, you had all the big bands at the Lido. You had Status Quo, you had Mungo Jerry of the time. The Stones played at the Lido. So we went to see all, I mean, you never appreciated it at the time, but we all went to see those things.
I know I saw the Hollies there, saw PJ Proby there. There was loads more, but I know Rolling Stones were there, but my sister was working in the Castle Mona this time. And she met like the Rolling Stones just to speak to them and, as they were staying there, you know. She wasn't very impressed with them, but except there was the one Brian that actually died eventually, which she said he was really lovely. The others a bit aloof, you know, but it was something to see them.
Where the other bands were all like rock and roll at that time, like sort of Cliff Richard, and were really was different. A bit of jazz in that and there. And I got good players in the band, so we had a very, very good reputation and did well.
The summer season should have finished in September, and it was extended to October because it was still so busy. So they added a 4 weeks extra on the summer season. So their summer season that year went from May 1969 to October.
The Majestic was quite the place to go, and it was quite posh. For us, you know, country bumpkins in a sense. It was quite posh because they had tables with telephones on and you could pick the phone up and order your drink. Or if there was sometimes you'd get a call and it was a chap over the far side of the room saying, "Do you want to dance?" You know, and that was really different and really fun.
We used to go to the Texas Bar on Onken Head with our cowboy hats on and all the usual. And that was really good.
There always was a cabaret. There was cabarets on at the Falcon Cliff. We went to see Grumbleweeds, which was a comical band of the day, I suppose. Cabarets on in the Villiers, which is long gone now. We've been there to see people like Aidan J. Harvey. I remember taking my mother-in-law there once and she fell asleep right in the front row. Out of town, you had Russian Abbey. They always had cabarets. They may not have been top stars, but they were local artists. The likes of TT Week. If my dad went to work, as he did in the morning, come like practice week, once he come home, he couldn't get his car back in because the whole of the drives all the way around were packed with bikes. And that happened for the whole fortnight. And you had the full fortnight for TT. Then we had Scooter Week after that, Cycling Week. And then we had Glasgow Fair fortnight and you had the Lancashire holidays. And then towards the end of the season, we had the dancers because we had all the ballroom dancing at the villa. So the guest houses, the hotels were just full. We did have an Irish week. We tended to get the Irish people in, it probably was the beginning of August because all the children used to go back to school early in Ireland and Scotland. It was just manic the whole time.
It would start pre-TT week, that's when it would really kick off. But then you had other cabarets. You had the Fulton Cliff, which was started, again, summer season, and that was a fantastic place. You could go along the promenade, you can get in the lift, and was away up there.
Being with my partner and my sister with her boyfriend, they took us all around the island and showed us places, you know, and drinking in the, like, it was the commercial in Ramsey that used to have, it's just a nice atmosphere, and the jukeboxes, all the jukeboxes you had, you know.
But you used to get coach trips, and there was the beach hotel in Ramsey as well. I can't always remember who we went to see, but there was always entertainment on, different entertainment on, a lot more than what we've got now.
The Cunningham's Camp that was up by Shoprite, I remember that they used to have a cinema up there. And I remember going and watching the cinema in Cunningham's Camp. You know, and they used to have the dance hall there. You know, and it was so different to what you'd get.
And then when I was older, to go into the pubs and things, used to go to the Hawaiian Bar underneath the palace. You could literally do a pub crawl along the prom. You didn't have to go anywhere else. There was bars galore, the Mermaid. Around the corner from where we lived in Empress Drive was the Crescent Cinema, and used to have really, really good films on in the Crescent Cinema. So we used to go there quite a lot. The Summerland Disco as well. That was another haunt of ours.
That season I went home. The time I was engaged by then. I wanted to get back home to Liverpool after the season, and my sister came back to Liverpool. We were looking for jobs. We were going in and out of jobs. We couldn't settle. Kept wanting to come back to the Isle of Man. We had about 6 different jobs, stayed a day in one job. And then we rang the Castle Mona, and they only had one vacancy for somebody. And I let my sister go to that. It's a couple of months after that, I went over and worked in Noble's Hospital then. I ended up with Jane Crucall, and I worked there for 25 years till I retired.
Mum and Dad moved back, I think, mainly because my mum had family in the UK. Her mother was still alive. My brother still lived in the UK. And I think it was quite hard for her. In the winter, she loved the summers, but in the winter it was quite hard for her. So they moved back in 1973, and I stayed on and got married.
I wanted to live here full time, because when I went back to Liverpool, I was absolutely pining for the Isle of Man. And I was in love at the time as well. And when we did go back, I really did love it. But it was a bit different from when I was working in the hotels. I went to work in the hospital and had to get serious then. I was engaged to get married, and we had to save up and everything. But even then, I used to go back to Liverpool. I missed all my family and friends. I used to go back to Liverpool quite a lot. Yeah, when I went back with my boyfriend, I knew I wanted to be with him, and I loved the art. As I say, there was so much still going on with the island, but I had to settle down a bit because I had my 3 children then. But I always wanted to go back to Liverpool. And the funny thing is now, I go back to Liverpool. I absolutely love it. I love the people. I love everything about it. But I couldn't live there anymore. I'm an island person now, and I think I'm happy with that.
We decided to stay because our daughter was 5 at that time, and so she needed to go to full-time school. So it was a good time to set a base.
And she got a lot of stick, having a Barnsley broad Yorkshire accent.
I'd never really planned to stay. I never really planned to go back. It's just that the time was going, and I stayed. You know, and then I met my husband, and then, you know, and then I had a child, and that was in the late 70s. And that was it. I stayed. I started making a lot of friends, which you do very quickly here on the island. The island life itself, you'd go a long way to beat the island life, especially in them days where it was a lot safer.
This, to me, has always been my home now. I think with a lot of people, you fall in love with a place, and you go through the good times and the bad times. But the good times far outweigh the bad times.
And so, all our comeovers, Angela, Pam, Steve, Jennifer, Jerry and Chris, became stopovers.